Hello and welcome to Susie Explores, a podcast with me, Susie Collier. Today my guest is the amazing and wonderful Lewis Cole, who inspires fans throughout the world with his incredibly iconic drumming, daringly honest lyrics, introverted and extroverted songs, and broad breadth of style. In this conversation, we talk about what it feels like to go to bed at 9 a.m, live on Skippy, and then realise that it feels good to fuel with fab food and occasionally see the sun rising in the morning having slept already.
I used to go to bed really late. I'm talking 9 a.m. late.
Yeah.
Like every day. And then yeah. I'd wake up at 5 p.m. and the sun would be going down. And it was just like, it was weird. The thing is the when it's late at night, it's not even just that nobody's messaging you or people aren't aiming for your attention or anything. It's just that like the general sense and energy of the world around you is quiet, and there is no replacement for that. It's actually a very incredible time. And also being in LA, it was really the only time I would want to drive and go anywhere was at that time. So I'd be going to the market at like 4 a.m. and like getting my groceries then and stuff like that, you know, the one 24-hour market. But also there's a thing that happens, at least in my experience, where when I have late bedtimes, I never felt tired and ready for bed. My body was just always probably in a state of confusion. Looking back, that's probably what it was. But I don't think I ever felt like, oh, I'm winding down. It's, you know, I'm getting tired. I'm ready for bed. It was like I would look at the clock and be like, it's 9. I need to go to bed. That was the only reason I would. That doesn't sound healthy or sustainable, but that's what I did for many years.
I don't know if health and sustainability come into it right now, because I think the most golden thing you've just said is the fact that everything becomes quiet. And that's when you feel like driving, or it's when you feel like maybe just being. And it is a fact that no one's going to answer your message if you message them now. I think that's amazing. Listen, on this morning when you're literally hand holding a mic, which is really interesting because you're obviously so comfortable doing that and it doesn't faze you, and you're not thinking, oh, my hand is getting really tired, and you're just thinking this is fine and this is natural. I would really like to know what has made you feel happiest in the last few days.
That's a great question. The last few days, I guess yesterday I was in a hotel room in Seattle and I had about an hour where I didn't really know what I was going to do. So I was just listening to these mixes that I've been working on for my new album. And a lot of times when I do that and I'm listening critically, obviously, because it's in that phase of like, I need to mix these. And it's like, I need to listen to them with those ears on, where I'm like looking for things to fix or make better. But I actually listened to them back and I was like, actually really, I really enjoyed them. And it kind of caught me by surprise, because it's been a while since I kind of just had that, a pure moment of like, hey, I actually like this. And it actually made me pretty, pretty happy.
I really love the idea that you say that that's a pure moment. And what I just don't understand is why don't we allow pure moments to happen like every day? Why don't we?
Yeah. Do you think it's an allowing thing, or is that we just like, we've had a few pure moments early on and then it's like, the ones that we're going for need to be on that level. So it's like, you know, you're always striving for those moments and they can't really, you can't really just like make them. They kind of have to, like a lot of things need to line up. Like yesterday, a lot of things needed to line up for me to have a nice time.
So what were the things that lined up? Okay, Seattle, I get that. Hotel room, I also get that. Hour with nothing much to do, I get that. But is there anything else in your day that meant that you could release in that way? I don't know what you'd been doing during that day.
Yeah, I think the main thing is just that the mixes just sounded good. Like there is a lot, people always ask me like, well, you mix your own stuff, but isn't it always like infinite? You're always going to want to keep mixing and mixing until, you'll never be happy. But it's like, no, there's a clear threshold line that it crosses at some point, and it's like, these songs sound how I want them to.
Yeah.
And it's always there. It's a very clear line for me. It's never like, oh, I'll just keep mixing for infinity. It's like, no, the song is good now. And it somehow, the ones I listened to yesterday at least, kind of crossed that for me. And so it was, I think that was the main thing. It just sounded good to me.
Okay. So You say there's a threshold, and with no lack of confidence in any way, you're saying to me that you always do get to that threshold where you just let it go and you just say, yeah, okay. And you're not going to wash the living daylights in an infinity kind of way with the mixing that you're doing. And you always get to that time and you always know when that is?
No, sometimes I never reach it. And then I just, they're the tracks I'm less excited about putting out. And I'm sure there'll be some on this album that I'll just have not ever figured out what I was supposed to change for me to like them more. So I don't always get there, but I at least try to. You know, like on my last album, I did so many versions of, I just kept redoing and redoing, but it's like I had a, you know, I had a, like a light pinpoint light at the end of the tunnel that I was going for with sound. And I knew if I reached it, and I kind of knew if I didn't. Sometimes it's harder to know. Sometimes it's like, yeah, I think I like this, or I think this song is as good as it's ever gonna be. And you don't know like what to change or what to make different. It's just like, yeah, you just can't do it. It's, certain songs, at least for me, I just, that's as good as it'll be, and I'll just put it out because I can't figure out what I don't like about it. You know, or it's just, it's the song, I guess the song itself wasn't as good as I hoped originally or something like that.
But that doesn't mean you're going to cut it from the album necessarily. You're just saying...
No, because it's still good.
Yeah.
Or good enough, you know, for, at least from my own opinion, yeah.
But if you have a kind of a pinpoint of light with regard to the sound that you want to achieve, which, I mean, I feel so lucky because you sent me two of those tracks and I've really drunk them in, and there's so much to say about them. But you're saying that you can see the pinpoint of light with regard to sound. Do you have all sorts of pinpoints? Like, do you have a pinpoint for harmony and groove and feel? And are they different pinpoints? Because you said sound, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, I guess because I'm so in the mixing phase right now, that's kind of... I mean, that pertains to all of that. You know, if the mix is wrong, it's like if one element is wrong, like you can create like the biggest, nicest groove with like beautiful harmony and melody and everything's working, but then your lyrics are dumb and it's like, it doesn't even matter. It's like everything's ruined.
Yeah, it's really so, true.
Somehow it's like, it's this like delicate ecosystem, and man, one thing can destroy it. Maybe things matter, certain things matter more than others in that, but you know what, you get what I'm saying. So there are pinpoints throughout the whole process for sure, but I guess because I'm so in the mixing one right now, that's kind of what I'm thinking about. It's like the other stuff has been taken care of.
I see. You're too far gone. Okay, so let's wind back the clock and not even think about pinpoints for a minute. And you mentioned lyrics, and you said basically if the lyric sucks, then, you know, what are we even playing at with everything else in there? And I really want to know how you feel about lyrics in terms of creating them and what happens when you can't, and also how you know when you've really got a banger and it's just rolling and it's just got its own momentum. So what's it all about?
I've had good luck. Now I don't know what works and doesn't work. I just know that I've had good luck with certain things.
Okay.
Like trying to say something in a way that I would want to say it in real life if I was trying to talk to either myself or someone, or, you know, like trying to be like, I don't want to change how I talk too much. Sometimes I do it for like an effect, like, oh, clearly I'm trying to be this, for, you know, to say something in a, I'm not the most articulate person. What am I trying to say? You know, if you're trying to say something in a funny, weird way, it's like clearly, obviously, like, you're trying to be weird there. And sometimes that works because it's like, oh, interesting or something. But a lot of times I've had good luck with just trying to say something the way that I guess I would try to say it in real life, in a real life interaction. And that tends to make me happier in the long run. Like I can listen to the song more and more.
Are you ever worried about saying things to other people? Whether it's, you know, a word of wisdom or a criticism or just something you feel really strongly about. Are you ever worried about that? Would you rather just kind of disappear and just think it and not say it? Or,
yeah, for sure. I mean, if I have to be confrontational with anyone.
No, that's what I'm wondering.
I'd rather just dissolve.
Because it's interesting that you're saying with the lyrics that you want to say something as you would say it. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering whether it's, you know, as you would think it, because I think a lot of your lyrics are really, they're really direct and mm-hmm. they really just say it as it is. So that's why I'm thinking, yeah, I wonder whether you worry about saying things to people and whether you are confrontational or not. I wouldn't imagine you are.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's why some, you know, that's what I'm saying. Some of the lyrics are like extra, you know, like they're outside of reality. And then some of them are like what I would say to maybe myself or something like that. If I was speaking to myself, like, so I guess that is more like a thought because I'm not actually talking to myself. Sometimes I am, but I'm not actually talking to myself too much. I'm more thinking clear words to myself, but I guess I would call that talking to myself. So yeah, that's a good point. Good call on that.
But it's hard, isn't it? It's really hard because, you know, yeah, I wouldn't think you're confrontational and yet you show all sorts of parts of yourself when you are in front of people in a particular kind of a way. But I think what's really golden about speaking with you is that you can get to a really, it feels a very kind of intimate moment of reality talking that we've got to a couple of times actually. And it just feels just very easy and lovely and precious, but it's not something that you can necessarily be all the time, because otherwise that's wearing your heart on your sleeve. And that mm-hmm. is, that's not necessarily the place that you need to be to kind of exist from day to day. So, you know, I do wonder what it's like, you know, you've got a household of folks, you've got people coming in and out the whole time. And what's it like being you with all these other people around you? And how are you? What do you choose to say?
Mm-hmm. I can get pretty inward, and if I'm trying to work something out, positive or negative, I go inward, and I'm not really a social guy. So I can get pretty not Stonehenge. What are the ones on Rapa Nui? You know those like giant head statues?
Yes, I do, but I know Stonehenge better. So
yeah, right.
Let's go with Stonehenge.
You're
kind of
close to Stonehenge.
Okay. Well,
yeah, no, I just mean that I don't get very I can get pretty inward and not outward, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty quiet and thinky.
Okay.
Stuff like that. Sometimes my interactions are that, and I feel like I can go pretty up and down. You know, maybe a little more than the average person. You know, like when I've had a period of lows or something, then I can bounce up pretty high. And it's like every time I have like a good day, I know the next day I'm gonna have like a almost like a happiness hangover. You know, like a day where I need to be sad just because I was happy for no other reason than that. It's like my brain doesn't have enough juice to sustain that. It needs to like reset. What would you call that? Rebound or what? No, what's the thing?
I just want to stick with happiness hangover. I think that's absolutely exquisite. And it's really true. But I also think that when there's a time that we're supposed to be happy, so it becomes, you know, it's going to be your birthday and you've decided to do a hang. And the anticipation is kind of, I'm quite excited about this. And then you have the thing itself, and maybe that is less exciting than the anticipation, or you're surprised by joy and how you've been feeling, and then the next day you feel that kind of lowness and natural sag, the hangover. Mm-hmm. So I think it can happen both ways. I think, you know, the anticipation can be outweigh what actually happens in the reality of the moment, and I think that afterwards you can have the kind of low having had a surprising high. And you say perhaps it's, again, it's the second time you use normal in our conversation, but you're saying maybe it's a bit unusual that you feel those highs and lows in that kind of a way. And I'd say, because so many of us are inward looking and inward facing, that we actually don't know how other people are in this world with regard to their highs and lows, how they feel about them, how they deal with them, and whether they ever feel like they have a happiness hangover. So mm-hmm. I'd say we don't know, and I don't know how to judge myself or yourself against normal, because I just don't know what normal is.
Right. Yeah, I guess if I'm just trying to like view myself from the outside compared to the sample size of people that I'm close with, then I would say there are probably some differences there. But I know what you're saying. That is also true.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's it's kind of I think it's an important one. In your house at the moment, how many people are living?
4 people.
And how many years have you been in that house?
2015. 8 years.
Okay. So in 2015, you find this place and you're still in it now, which must mean that you love it to some degree. Do you feel that it is absolutely home, or do you feel that where loved ones are is where home is? Where is home for you?
Yeah, there's definitely a feeling of home here, I would say. I also have feelings of like I'm ready to probably move on somewhere else at some point. So I'm aiming for that, but I don't have any solid plans like that. And I would say for now, this probably is the place.
Why has it been the place for so long?
It's a really nice place. I mean, I like the area. Most of LA I don't like, and I just wouldn't want to be there. Ideally. So this area that I'm in is, I like it. So I like being here, and yeah, I don't know. I just, it's nice. I also like the people I'm with too. So I have a vision of moving on at some point, but it's not really, it's not 'cause I like dislike this current situation.
Is it because you want to be by yourself somewhere?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's sometimes a thought that comes to me. And maybe like a space thing. Seems kind of like something that I maybe would need at some point.
Maybe might want to need at some point. I don't know. It's weird. Jacob has always said he really loves that house, and and there's always something happening. There are always people in there, and I think it can be really lovely to know that you can find space within a community feel, in that you can go out of your door and there are other people around, and that can be really comforting, even if you're feeling inward. And I know that myself, because when the kids are actually around, it's, you know, it's a full house and things are happening, but it's a nice kind of a feel. But space is also, real space is a gorgeous thing. And as you don't necessarily find that at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, you've got to find it at in other ways, I guess.
Right. Space is sometimes it's really an essential thing for me. I just feel like I can't think properly or operate properly if there isn't like a good balance of that.
But then what constitutes space? Because we can't just say, look, do you know something? We're going to hop to Seattle and we're going to have a hotel room just for an hour, just to be by ourselves and just to listen in a non-critical way, or to just be. We can't do that. So how do you actually get space in your day? You know, you're just about to go to sleep. That's fine. You'll get some space. Tomorrow, how are you going to have some space in your day?
Maybe I won't.
You see?
Yeah.
So how important is this anyway?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I have my my room here. So I spend most of my time. You know, I'm just like, this is where I do all my music and stuff.
Is it? So you've got all your music set up with you in your room?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Basically. Well, not my drums.
So where are the drums?
The drums are in the garage.
Are they happy in the garage?
Yeah. Because I can play loud and I'm not thinking like if it's irritating the neighbors.
But
maybe it is though, but I'm not thinking about it.
But don't you get all the moths and spiders and insects that you don't want in the house in the garage?
Yeah, actually there was a dead rat in there 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And then I was like, all right, I need to fix the bottom of the garage door. There was a
gap.
A gap.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to call a guy. He was like a really business like Polish guy, and he was like, yeah, this is a problem. And then he came in and like fixed the whole thing. And then while he was doing that, I was like, I need to clean this garage, which I hadn't done for years. And so I, you know, just having a dead animal in there, it just like makes you and you're like, you spend so much time in there, you're like, I'm probably breathing stuff in, I don't know. All I can think about was bubonic plague, you know, but like, I know it probably wasn't happening, but I was like, I just don't like the feel of that, like the feng shui is kind of off. So I cleaned my garage for 6 hours, and I almost cried, actually, because it was like so frustrating. And then I almost cried at the end with how good it looked, because I had like two emotional reactions to just cleaning my garage.
I bet you didn't take a before and after, did you? You didn't take a picture? No. With it. That's just, I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, I know. But my friend Isis, when I showed her, because she helped me a little bit at the beginning. Shout out Isis, Chiquita Magic.
Mm-hmm.
And then she came in, she had to go to a gig, and then she came in after and saw the final product. And her reaction was just so visceral. She was like, oh, Lewis. That's what she said. That's how good I cleaned my garage.
Okay, that's a shockingly good reaction in there. You haven't answered the question that I really want to have answered, and it's not rhetorical. Who picked up the rat and got rid of it?
Oh, that was me.
Oh, there was no hesitation at all. You know,
it was stiff. I had were food gloves. You know, like when you're in school and in the cafeteria, and they have the plastic clear gloves. So I was just like, all right. I got to do that. And just put it in a trash bag and then said a little prayer and that was it.
Okay. I'm not sure about the prayer. But I know what you mean about sort of dead things being...
Does that mean that you don't like rats?
Well, in fact, yesterday, Sophie and I were having a meal and the door was open without any netting at all because it was quite nice. And I saw her eyes just go like this. And she said, oh, rats just... run by. And in really kind of a strange way, it was like a storm's coming, so we sort of closed all the doors. And you think, well, that's just, I don't think that's really necessary, but we saw that. And then I was doing some clearing yesterday, and I was doing a bit of hoovering in this room, thinking I quite like this to feel like a nice fresh space when I see Lewis tomorrow morning. And there was a really huge dead spider, again rigor mortis, so I felt okay about hoovering that up. But it's like, how many weeks and months have I just been sitting with the energy of that poor creature in there? I haven't been here much, but it is interesting just thinking, well, what am I picking up from this thing being here? So you've had the guy who's fixed the bottom of the garage. You've got rid of your own rat. You've cleared it up. And does it ever get cold in there? Have you got heaters and stuff in there?
Oh, yeah. I blast the heater even in the summer because it decreases my warm-up time by several minutes. Yeah. So I just let the heater rage in there. And then that's how I prefer it.
Okay.
Have you ever played a gig when it's cold?
I can tell you all sorts of stories, unbelievable stories where I've got fingerless gloves on in order to try and keep some movement in my hand, and it's just not doing anything at all. And somebody has said that you got to wear a certain thing where you can't wear a thermal underneath or anything, and you are it's literally unbelievable. So yes, and you must have done, surely it's not just your garage.
Yeah. But man, trying to play violin with fingerless gloves sounds hard.
Well, it's just stupid. You can't do anything. There's no freedom in the hand. But it's a constant thing. I don't know how much you think about it before you play, but it's the temperature of the hand, and actually it's how moist the hands are. So before you go on, you might just be really excited, but you're definitely going to feel a kind of a stickiness, and you're just constantly sort of wiping down in there. Mm-hmm. And the temperature of the hand is probably going to be on the cool side until I just come off. When I come off, it's just miraculously lovely and warm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what about you?
So what do you do for the moisture? Do you do like baby powder? What's the classic world?
I know people do all sorts of things, and people do baby powder. I just think you've got to wear a really good pair of tights or pants that you can just be wiping down, because you're going to keep on making this stuff until you've done it. Mm-hmm. I think so. That I mean, really, you know, I put baby powder, well then, you know, I'm probably going to make it through the baby powder, and then I got baby powder and the stuff coming through. No, I'd rather just wipe it off. But what about you? You know, you got to have the sticks have got to feel really, really good in your nice open-handed drum position. Here we go. I'm just about to do it. It's got to feel good, hasn't it? So what happens when it doesn't feel good?
I mean, it's terrible. I'm just thinking of one show that I played in like North Carolina 2019, and it was like outdoor and really cold, It was just terrible. I sounded really bad.
What was it feeling like? Tense, cold, tight?
My joints and my muscles and my tendons just wouldn't, they wouldn't do anything. It's like when you try to run in a dream.
Yes. Oh,
it's like
don't.
That, but in real life, and you're trying to play a, you're trying to play some fancy fills, and they sound terrible. Yeah. Terrible.
No, that's not nice. But
yeah,
even when you're having a really, your whole body's having a bad day, does anybody come up to you after the gig in North Carolina and say, Lewis, that was just epic, just to hear you put in that kind of pocket? I mean, did anybody say anything positive after that gig?
Yeah, there's a couple people. Mostly not, though. I think everyone kind of knew. It was like, oh, this is pretty terrible. They could visibly see us just like blowing on our hands with like hot air, you know, trying to fix the situation. I just remember somebody handed me a bag of unmarked drugs after. And I don't even know if he told me what kind they were or what the details were, but I definitely didn't know what they were.
What?
And that's when you said, did anyone come up to you after? I was actually, that memory came back to me.
Really?
So between
you, me, and the gatepost, what did you do with the bag?
Well, I asked if a bandmate wanted them because they were more in it. I actually haven't, the hardest drug I've ever done is marijuana, because I don't think I don't know if I can handle anything beyond that.
Yeah.
Because when I have marijuana, I go really deep into some different zones, and like to the point where I almost feel like my thoughts are so vivid, it almost feels like hallucination. I mean, I've never actually done anything hallucinogenic, so I don't really know. But to me, it's pretty strong. I don't know if, like, anything that lies outside of that realm that's more intense. I just like. Not sure if I'm even ready for that.
Well, I don't know whether there is a time to be ready for it. I think we've got to really understand our own mental capacity and what happens when you have a drink or whatever you're taking. And I think if you know that you got a line there, that's pretty impressive, because I think that in the musical world, you're offered anything a lot of the time. And so that must mean that you have positively said no many times along the way.
Yeah.
What do you like with food? I mean, I don't know whether after our conversation you're going to say, this is definitely time for a midnight snack and I'm going to have whatever it is, or whether you're thinking, I'm looking forward to breakfast because it's going to be or whether you don't think much about food.
I think I naturally, to give a real broad answer here, I'm just going for, I don't really get hungry during the first part of my day. Like when I wake up, I'm not hungry for like 8 hours, sometimes 10. I ate breakfast today at 9 p.m. and I wasn't even hungry then. I was just like, I need to eat food. Like my resting metabolism has to be high. I mean, I think, like, I've tried to calculate it based on, like, you know, you go to these like total daily energy expenditure calculators online and they'll tell you like your caloric maintenance level is 2,700 or whatever, but it's like, I think it's like probably 500, 600 above that or something like that. I mean, I haven't figured it out, but it's like, so I need to make sure I eat. Otherwise I get real weak and I get real thin, which is like, you know, that's, I'm not complaining. It's cool, but it's, I just, sometimes I'm just not ever hungry. And then sometimes I'll get like really hungry and then I like to eat healthy though. So I like going to when I'm touring, I like going to the grocery store and I like eating ingredients. I like getting a bag of lettuce. I like getting berries. I like getting dried mango. I like getting like beef jerky or like smoked fish or something, you know, like something like, you know, some protein or something like that I can just like eat. Sometimes I get sardines. You know, I have to eat those in the hotel bathroom over the sink.
Yeah.
And I prefer that. I like ingredients, and that's kind of how I am at home too. You know, I go for like the essence. Like I really like oatmeal with just like salt on it, and just, I think there's a lot of flavor in there. I used to eat insane when I was younger, like corn dogs constantly, and just like Skippy, like the peanut butter weird added oil. It's like from a factory, or, you know, from a lab. And just like I would eat
Skippy,
bagel bites, and candy constantly and stuff. And I think I it's I think your taste buds, like, they'll you know, they'll adjust to whatever the tasks are. So it's like, oh man, we're getting blasted with like unnatural, super high flavors. Then they kind of get desensitized. But since then, I really went super healthy. I would eat like raw broccoli and like stuff like that. You know, they're kind of like, you know, not considered good. And I think my taste buds really resensitized. So I'm just super into ingredients, stuff like that. That's what I go for. What about you?
I think I am also really interested in ingredients, and because I want to fill my life packed full with so many things, I want to have some fuel that's really going to make me feel good. So even when I'm not hungry, I make myself eat, and I need to eat really frequently and a lot of it. And if I do that, then I just know that I'm going to have that energy. And if I forget and I just don't give myself that fuel, it makes a profound difference. And I do have friends who will say to me, listen, not going to speak to you anymore. You just eat this now, because quite clearly I'm not being pleasant, or I just have disappeared. Yeah, and yeah. So, you know, it's one of those things. But, you know, you talk about ingredients, and I think it's, you're talking about, you know, Skippy versus, you know, your sardines over the sink. And I think of all the ingredients of your music and how, you know, maybe there's space for Skippy and sardines and broccoli and everything to go into the music to make this unbelievable fabric of beauty that you create. And as I said to you when I last saw you, there are just so many songs that you've written that our family feel that they are incredibly special to us, because they mark different times in our mood and in our lives, and we can always go back to them and always enjoy them. And they span so many years of your music making up to right now. But what I really notice is that the reason why I think that there are so, I can identify so many different ingredients, whether it is Skippy or broccoli or whatever, in your music, is because of the breadth of style that you have. And I just can't believe it. And I just wonder how you've picked up all the different things that make you feel the depth of groove that means that no one sounds like you when they play the kit. No one in the world sounds like you, which is incredible. And when you write string parts, there's no one in the world that writes string parts like you. I can identify them a million miles away. It's you. And so I want you to tell me about your ingredients.
Well, thanks. That's really nice of you. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know why certain people's filters are strong, because everyone just has influences, you know? It's like you can't not have influences doing this. So I have influences just like everyone else. And I don't know. I mean, I hear my influences when I hear my drumming, for example. Like, I'm like, oh, Keith Carlock, Nate Wood, you know, like Jack yeah. DeJohnette, Tony Williams, you know, and stuff like that. But it is nice that you think that. And I don't know why certain people's filters like are stronger than other people's, you know, influence filters. For me, I have a lot of limitations with music. I think maybe that's over the years, I don't really know what the answer is, but I'm just going to say, like, one theory I have is I think my musical limitations have maybe helped in that area a little bit with the uniqueness. Like, I was trying to play keyboard last night on a gig, and I was just thinking, like, I barely know how to play this one song. I've played it for like 7 years now, and it's like pretty simple. There's like triads and stuff. Like, I'm not good. Like, I need to remember, like, oh shit, this next chord's coming. I have to play it correctly. You know, I'm like really not very good at music in a lot of ways. Like, if I sit down at the piano, I have no idea what it's going to sound like. I don't know what theory is. I know basic theory. I know what a major scale is. I know what like a major seven is or something like that, or like a major triad. But I really don't. I don't know about this stuff. And I think that it's maybe kind of helped me. Like I think it's limited me from maybe absorbing too much or sounding too much like a certain thing sometimes, when it's like, I only know how to do, I have my skill set, and I can, if I really need to and I need to write something big and involved and complex, I can slow it down to my pace in the writing process.
Exactly. Of course you can.
You know, and make something big. And that's my left side of my brain, or whatever, you know, these people would call it. You know, the organizational part, being able to control my few skills that I have to create something big. And I think, you know, I'm getting on tangents here. I'm sorry, but
this is so nice.
Yeah, 'cause I'm just thinking about writing now. But like I have a, yeah, I have my limited skill set, and then I have this organizational part of my brain that's really strong too. And it kind of goes like, okay, you have a vision. And that's the other strong point I would say about myself, is that I have an end vision. And it's like, I just need to plug in my flaccid, pathetic skills and then get, you know, and organize them in a way to like get this vision that I have that's clear. It's like, as long as I have the vision, like I can get there. You know, it's like people are like, yo, man, what are those chords you're doing? And I'm like, I don't know what they are, man. I have no idea. You know, I just know that I like, you know, I like certain things. But so I think that's also kind of helped me maybe have a sound, which, you know, there are certain songs I have too, which are like my second album. I didn't know that I was going to have a career in music. I was like, maybe I'll just like, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. Maybe I don't. That's what I want to have. I don't know if anyone will ever listen to this. So there's a few tracks on like album two on my solo album two that are total rips of other people's music. Like the first one is a Bartok rip.
Yes.
And there's a that was a school assignment. I was in a school, like I was going to night school for like film composing, because I was like, yes, parents, I am trying to like make money. And I was like, I'll go to night school, and you know. But so I was there, and they were like, you need to copy this Bartok song. So I was like, I'll do it. And then I was like, I'm putting out an album, I might as well do it. You know, I was like, I didn't think anyone's gonna listen to it. So there's that, and there's a Beach Boys ripoff that has some Chopin ripoffs in there and stuff too. But I mean, the rest of them are me. But like, it's like I've done that too, like as an assignment for myself, you know. So there are moments where I'm totally ripping someone, and there are moments where I sound exactly like Keith Carlock or Nate Wood on drums,
yeah,
or Jack DeJohnette or something like that, you know. So it's in me, but it's like a lot of times my limitations, I think, have kind of helped me not sound good enough to be able to sound like someone else.
I love that for so many reasons, but I also love the fact that you say, again with a lot of confidence, you say, but I've got an end vision. So then let's pile up the limitations and see what we can do to get to the end vision. And I'd say that so many people I speak to in the world say the one thing they just can't get is the end vision. And they might say, oh, I got a bit of a riff here, or I've got a bit of a groove here, or I've got a bit of a line here, or I really love this bit of Mahler and I'd quite like to use it. I get all that, but you have an end vision. And then no matter what your limitations are, whether it's cold hands or an inability to recognize a chord, you're going to get there. You're so lucky. Do you realize how lucky you are?
Yeah, no, I do. I'm just really glad I have that. It's my guiding light, my guiding force, or whatever you call it.
Because in a sense, that's a bit like saying, well, I have to somehow get to Timbuktu and I've only got a bicycle. Well, and my legs, well, I'll just have to do it because there's no choice. Yeah. And in a sense, a limitation can be the most wonderful thing in the world, because instead of going to the supermarket that's open 24 hours and thinking, man, there are 24 different types of beans, which one shall I go for? Basically, there's just a whole shelf that says beans. You just have to have the thing that it is.
Yeah, that's pretty good. You're connecting all these, you're threading a needle through all these patches here. That's good.
Well, I like taking bits of material and sewing them and making them into things. That's really just an honest thing. Talking of threading a needle and making things out of material, when we did see each other, we did talk about color in terms of clothes that you wear.
Yeah, you were talking trash about my gray jacket. You weren't into that.
Listen, I think trash...
You came on real hard there.
Trash
is... I think
that's a little bit strong. I did say that it had some nice stuffing in it. But as far as the aesthetic was concerned, you came up to me and said hello, and it took me a second to know that it was you.
And I have a drastically different haircut too, but I remember I was like, hey, Susie. And you're like,
whoa.
He's like, well, no. You're like scanning for like 3 seconds.
Well, no, I have to sort of look up, which takes a time. And then I found you. And you thought it was because of the haircut, which it just totally wasn't. It was not the hair. I just don't believe it was the haircut, which I think looks great. But though you were just in a sort of scary dark jacket. This is quite a warm night in LA, and it was really quite nice. And everybody else was, we were wearing bikinis at the after party, and then there was you in this padded dark jacket and a very plain T-shirt, and it was a little surprising. Yes.
Yeah. It's a different brand for me, because I used to wear freaking weird stuff, you know, like weird, colorful stuff. I don't know. At some point, I was just like, I don't know if this is. I think that was kind of maybe an era. I mean, I still have my pants. I have like donuts on them, and yeah, I have some of the stuff. But I just, for some reason, like, started buying like these, just like giant white T-shirts. I don't know what it was. I just felt like it was the end of an era or something.
Okay, yeah. But do we have to define ourselves in eras in that kind of way? Because obviously you look lovely in whatever you wear, but I mean, can you really own the fact that you've just said that was the end of an era? So that means that when we next meet each other, if you wear colour, are you going to say, listen, I know, I feel a bit apologetic about this because I've actually finished my colour era and I know I'm in my plain era, but I just couldn't resist. What are you going to say?
Yeah. You're totally right. I'm full of crap. I'm definitely going to wear colours. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I still have some. I'm like looking at my stuff now.
You said you were going to get the weird part of the night trousers out, and you said you were going to get them out. And
yeah.
Did you get them out?
Yeah. I just don't think they're in here.
But where would they be? Are they somewhere in the weird part of the night somewhere else?
That's a great question. There's a couple drawers I haven't been into in a while that are like just filled with stuff. It's possible it's there. Or in the garage or something like that.
Or in the garage. I mean, I feel it's so funny that when you and Genevieve came around for dinner that time, so many years ago, actually, I think it was 2015, not 2012.
Yeah, 2015. Yeah. You're right.
And we got the dressing up box out and we put on these things. And I just think, gosh, if we all came around to you, the dressing up would be really amazing, wouldn't it?
If we all
came around to you for dressing up, it'd be amazing.
Oh, like my supply.
Yes. Not of your current era.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely still have some weird stuff in here. I got some good hats, actually.
Come on, doesn't that make you feel slightly excited?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. No, it's very important to build your reality around you, you know? It's like, you got to have some, like, inspiration in that way, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I know people that, like, fill their houses with, like, toys or action figures or something like that, and it's like, dude, that's great. That's your
thing
aura that you need.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't even know what mine is now. I mean, I still care a lot. I have a very definite opinion about like what I wear and stuff like that. And I'm always going for something because it's, I don't know what it is. It's something, it's a new, another route to express something, you know.
It is.
I need to vibrate that membrane around me. Yeah, so I don't know. I have some good stuff. It's very important to me, though. I have to, even this, it looks plain kind of, but it's like,
oh,
it's,
this is beautiful.
Like deliberately like something that I really, like whenever I wear this, I'm happy to be wearing this.
Yeah. Well, you look lovely. I think if I wore that, you would think there was some kind of ghost walking into the room because it would just, it would take over. But I think you look
great. Which might be a good thing. I mean, it's worth trying. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely, when you wear this, you look like you're in a cult.
Yes.
Or leading a cult.
Yeah.
It's super long, too. I mean, it's like, it's 15 XL.
Oh, that's so clever. Really, no, one day I will put that on and be the ghost, and that'll be fun.
Yeah, it's a good look, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. Look at this, vibrate that membrane. That was such a good phrase. You just said that. You've coined something really beautiful in this world. So there's yesteryear with bright colours and certain grooves and things. There's right now, and you're producing this music that I think is life-changing and beautiful and wonderful with so many different influences. And then there's tomorrow, and maybe there will be a time when you move house and you are in a space that is much more to call your own. I don't know. But have you got any thoughts about the future beyond today for yourself?
Yeah, the future's a little bit scary because I know that when I'm done mixing this music, which is all orchestra music, which has just been a monumental task, I've really loved it. I love how overwhelming the job is.
Yes,
and
huge.
It's just made me so happy. It's like I wake up and I know exactly what I need to do to get the thing done. It's like I need to mix all this stuff. You know, it's just so great to be taken by that wave. And I just don't know. I had like a long writing block for maybe about a year or something. in like 2018 to 2019. And then I had just like an explosion of writing, which was like my last album, the Knower album.
Yeah.
And this current album.
Yeah.
And the writing blast lasted for like 2 years almost. And so that ended. And it's like, I'm afraid to like go back into it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, all right, what's next? You know, it's like, that's going to take so many, it's just so much energy and so much spirit to do, which, you know, it's why I'm alive and I will do it. And I will love doing it at some point, but it is scary to start. It's like when you go to the gym, you know, like, it's like you don't like going there sucks. And then once you start, you're like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I have some faint twinkles of visions. I definitely want to work with like a real choir. I've never worked with like a real choir
mm-hmm.
before.
Mm-hmm.
So I would really like to do that. Like stacking my own voice is like pretty limited and, you know, like one like slice of it. I would like to just have like a bunch of people
yeah.
in a room singing. That's like one idea I've had. And I don't know, I'll probably until I'm dead keep writing house grooves that
oh
are like,
please yes no
you know,
please do
like fast swung house grooves. There'll be definitely I think probably one on every album from now until I'm gone.
But it's so funny that again you say, look, I finished with the era of color and there will be one house groovy number on each album. Man, there might be 10. Okay, can't yeah. you just be can't you just be a bit elastic about all this?
Yeah, I do actually have an entire kind of at least short album of like techno drops, like dance drops. I actually played most of them when I opened for Jacob in Bristol.
That's great.
And so maybe that, yeah, maybe that'll be more like a bunch of house thingies on a collected body.
And that could be a really nice thing to do after this huge body of work. It could be really good to just get that out and think, yeah, let's do this thing.
You know, that actually has been my pattern with my solo stuff is like I'll put out like a normal, you know, release big album. And then I'll have like I had this extra songs and live sessions kind of straggler track album that I put out after my 2018 album, and then I just put out like these unused songs after my last real album. So that I think this techno thing, and this is an exclusive, like I've never said this publicly, so this is like
and
this
it's,
is the podcast right now.
Yeah, okay, it's exclusive but it's not a promise, right? Because you're gonna see how you actually feel when you get to it. But
yeah, but I can almost certainly say that it needs to come out at some point. And I actually retrospectively I'm most proud of the last album I put out, Quality Over Opinion.
Mm.
But the unused songs that I put out after that, it's kind of like it almost makes me happier in a certain way, because I didn't, they're the kind of songs I didn't listen to them too much. I didn't
scrutinize that's them. Right.
I didn't scrutinize them more, so I was still excited about them and still am more, like, I can't listen to Quality Over Opinion with, like, a clear mind yet. But the unused songs thing, I can just kind of, like, let it, it's just more enjoyable for me. So it's like, I'm kind of addicted to it now, so I think this techno thing would be I think I can pretty much certainly say that it'll come out after the orchestra stuff.
I'm so pleased. I also think that it's lovely when you create a whole pile of different things and you think, well, this is going to make the album, then all these lovely little golden nuggets, they're not going to make the album, so you don't put a huge amount of effort to polish and mix and all the rest of it. But some of those, again, just going back in times past, I think of some of the songs that I really love the most are B-sides. You know, they're the ones mm-hmm. that, you know, didn't quite make it to the A, and I think they're precious and probably more intimate than most things we get to listen to.
There is some special magic. What's the word? It's effortless. Yeah, there's some kind of effortlessness
yeah.
with that, where you're just like, you know, you don't squish it too hard.
That's right. Think, yeah.
I that can't really be replaced. Yeah.
Do you know something? It is kind of past your bedtime. And we've already been talking for a long, long time, and I know that in the same way that we have kind of knit together or been sewing the patches together, that there's an awful lot more to go. And and I'm looking forward to that whenever that is. But
This is volume one.
And
I didn't ask you enough questions too. I felt like I was talking too much.
I think folks are going to be so pleased to hear what you have to say, honestly. And I'm really pleased to have had this time with you. And your battery lasted, for goodness sake. That was really great.
Yeah, it's still going strong.
So thank you so much for being in this world. And as far as we are all concerned in this household, thank you for making our musical lives so much more rich just because you are you. So thank you for everything.
That's really nice of you. I really appreciate that. And thanks for having me. And I'm really glad that you're in this world too.
Thanks so much for coming on board for this conversation. There are many more I can't wait to share with you. So do click the subscribe button. And if you want to come and find me on Instagram or Patreon. And I definitely hope to see you here really soon. Thanks so much.